KBOO is hiring. We're currently accepting applications for our Volunteer and Outreach Coordinator position. We're looking for someone with experience in volunteer management and outreach to diverse communities and preferably has experience with nonprofits. This is a full-time position. For the full job description and instructions on how to apply, see the job listing on our website at kboo.fm/employment. Applications are due Saturday, March 22nd by 5 p.m. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.
We will not bow down to racism.
We will not bow down to
injustice.
We will not bow down to
exploitation. I'm gonna stay.
Opportunity, you in jeopardy. Yo, yo, set me free, don't hinder me, let me be.
I'm out here for freedom, I got the heat in case you need them. A straight soldier, ain't nobody told ya.
We've been together since I created border. The African border celebration is in order.
My only chance of being free is to fly within me, and it's illegal to kill a freaking eagle. A bird is never more important than my people. I guess we didn't need him, so I took away his freedom.
But now I'm talking about the craziness.
You know, and we're on the struggle. It's 7 p.m. It's 7:04 to be exact, 03. And I'm here once again, Olivia, your local preschool teacher on the verge of being unionized.
We're going to get to that.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. But it's not about me. It's not about me.
It always is.
It's about my co-host, Alyssa. Alyssa? How are you?
You can't say that. No, it's not about me. It's about the struggle.
It's about the struggle.
That's right.
With a capital S.
Okay. Alyssa night, Pariah.
Every Friday.
Your friendly neighborhood agitator. We got some friends in studio. I'm very excited. I want to get right into it. Amanda Hill.
Hi, Alyssa.
Member of UFCW, the United Food and Commercial Workers at Fred Meyer, who has some very important information for us about
toilet paper.
Toilet paper
and
hand sanitizer.
It's very important. And Adrian Enghouse, the president of the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Healthcare Practitioners.
Hello.
Professionals,
excuse me. So, Olivia, we've been avoiding talking about coronavirus for 2 weeks.
Have we? Yeah. We just haven't brought it up.
I feel like it's not appropriate. I don't know enough. I don't want to be out here talking about conjecture and opinions and making people feel nervous. So it's better to speak to people who are talking with people all day, every day, at their work, on the ground, about how this is working out. So at Fred Meyer, for anyone who's listening now, if you've been over there, you know it has been a little bit of a madhouse as people have been trying to figure out how to keep themselves clean and safe, and that's looked like emptying the shelves of
toilet paper.
I'm fascinated. What did they do before this with their toilet? Like, what was the deal? Like,
well, you know, I don't
they
know.
They were filthy.
It was crazy, though. Saturday morning, the local news agencies put out a list of things that you should stock up on. And, you know, toilet paper, hand sanitizer, flu medications, baby formula, canned goods. Oh my God, the canned goods. Just plethora of items that they should stock up on, and everybody took them to heart. They showed up at Fred Meyer. We were out of things left and right. We still do not have sanitizer back in stock. It is crazy. People think the world is ending, and the news is enjoying this. They are putting this out there and saying, you know, go do it, and you know, supporting capitalism left and right.
Mm. I mean, because
you have to pay for that.
It keeps people coming and watching the news every single day to make sure they're up to date on all of the latest things.
Hysteria.
To make sure it's not knocking
Hysteria.
On their door, and then they're watching ads.
Well, I want to, so I'm just going to conjecture here because as a healthcare professional, you know, that we have, for most of our lives, it was swine flu, it was Spanish flu, it's HIV. You know, we've had a lot of scares, and everyone's waiting for the one. And the older we get, I think the one is probably getting closer, whatever the one is. And so I think when this happened, you know, last Friday around 5 o'clock, I got a phone call that the hospital that I represented people at had gotten the first case in Oregon. And, you know, Kate Brown formed a task force, boom. I was on the phone with them, you know, very concerned about our members and their safety. And, you know, we had talked about it earlier in the week with that employer and some of our employers, but we had not really sat down, and we just sent an information request, stuff like that. So pretty quickly it became apparent that the whole state was not prepared for this. And I don't even know what made me think that Senator Merkley gives a crap what I think about, but I sent a message to his staff and said, hey, we have the first case in Oregon. I represent a hospital and I'm worried. And, you know, he called and he said, you know, I said, we don't have enough masks. I don't think we have enough masks. I don't think we have enough anything. I understand OHA has some things. I think we need them. So, you know, he was, he passed a bill. He got it right on it. And there was a bill for like $8.3 million. Billion dollars.
Wow.
You know, to really quickly develop in vaccination, really quickly get supplies and shore up the infrastructure. But, you know, it really highlights what the real issue is, right? The real issue is that we have underfunded the CDC. We have underfunded mm-hmm. the Oregon Health Authority. We have underfunded nationally what it takes.
The Center for Disease Control, CDC.
Yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and there was no leadership. In a lot of these other epidemics, there was real leadership nationally. Mm-hmm. You know, the CDC stepped into their role and said, this is what you need to do. Well, two things have happened. One, what we need to do keeps changing because no one's really sure. Is this airborne? Is it droplet? You know, like, how is it transmitted? And then the second, and by the way, they're not my animals, so everyone can keep petting their dogs. It Ooh. Is clearly, or by your cats. Maybe don't eat the bats, but I mean, honestly, like, it's not going to be transmitted by animals. It's either someone sneezes.
I have cystic fibrosis.
And
different condition. We never hit the cough button in studio because we believe.
Don't come around telling me I'm giving you coronavirus. Right. I have cystic fibrosis. I was born this way.
Have you seen all the memes of people making fun of like how scared people are of other people?
I saw some cystic fibrosis memes that were like coronavirus like causes and it's like some man standing like disgruntled and then it's like CF reaction. But that's just in the CF community. I'm sure y'all haven't seen those
videos. As we talk about often, in case you haven't already tuned in and you're not already familiar, Olivia has cystic fibrosis.
We've said it three times in the last minute.
You will hear people coughing on the show. We will not press the cough button and get used to it.
Okay, that's choking on water.
We love you, Olivia.
No, that's what it was. Yeah. Why she called me out. Okay, keep going.
Yeah. So, anyway, I mean, really, it's we're missing national leadership on the issue, and that's the real problem. And because we've underfunded, you know, there has not been an adequate amount of supplies ready for this. If we were to have a pandemic, so this is like in my mind, Ebola was a good warning shot. We apparently didn't take it seriously. And now we have coronavirus. It's another warning shot to this country. Like, you need to get your healthcare house in order. And we're not doing it. We're just not taking it seriously. And I think that a couple of things that are really important from a healthcare provider's perspective is we need to know a lot quicker than we did how it's transmitted. We now know it's droplet. We now know what to do. But we need to know it a lot more quickly. Now, I mean, granted, I've been doing this for like 22 years. I've been a nurse, an ER nurse, an ICU nurse. And a lot of my colleagues have. And we walk into rooms all the time. We have no idea what we're walking into. You know, they come in with some vague symptom and we walk in. So, you know, ultimately, we have to rely on our professional skills. You know, that is to wash our hands, you know, really quickly figure out whether we need a mask or not, whether they need a mask. Those are our clinical skills that we rely on. And those are important, but we also rely on a lot of guidelines to help us. And we're not getting those guidelines. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not getting that. And they're not quickly enough telling us how to protect ourselves. And, you know, that's where I think it is imperative that healthcare professionals are unionized. Because it's the only way they can stand up and speak out about what best practice is, what they need, what they aren't getting. Because you can bet you will not hear a nurse or a health professional at Providence or Legacy. They can't.
Absolutely.
Now, they might be saying something, but they can't really because they're not protected. And, you know,
can you talk about what that protection looks like for people who are not familiar?
So if you're in a unionized environment and you speak up, you know, you're protected because we're going to file a grievance if they try. There's a couple things in our medical culture, which we call just culture. And what that means is we can speak up about things that we're worried about, or if we make an error ourselves, we're supposed to speak up and be protected. By the way, it requires a union to enact that culture still. But also, you know, in terms of union, having a union means that if they try to fire you and they don't meet the tenets of just cause, if they don't meet the tenets of following our contract, our CBA, our contract that says you're going to go through this process, then we can step in, and we often do. So if you stand up and you say, I need an N95.
What's an N95?
It's the type of mask that everyone's buying because it's supposed to protect you from the coronavirus, which is another big misnomer.
Mm. We'll get to that.
Yeah, we will. So when you stand up and say, I need X or I need Y, they cannot just fire you for that. Now, you can't stand up and say, I need it, and the whole world's going to die because, you know, I mean, there's like whistleblower protection. There's a lot of protections in place. But unions provide a layer of protection, a layer of solidarity, so everyone in the department can stand up together and say this stuff. I mean, it's really important. Mm-hmm. Unions provide a layer of protection for health professionals that are imperative to our work.
So are y'all hearing anything about people who are working in healthcare facilities that don't have the protection of a union and what they're going through?
I have not heard. Okay. I can't say. They're welcome to call me and I'll help them put together a union.
And you should.
And I should. I'll happily put together a union for them really quickly. Or maybe 2 weeks it takes to get a vote.
Yeah.
But really,
growing seeds, we're getting there.
So yeah, I mean, that's what you have to do. We have to have unions for them. Everyone should. I don't know. I know that even in our other facilities that, we have represent a lot of employers. Some employers are being proactive and some are kind of dragging their feet. So, but they could drag their feet. They had the luxury because, the CDC wasn't sending out clear guidelines and they were changing them frequently, right? So everyone was struggling with that.
To me, that sounds very political. The reason behind us dragging our feet, we're one of the richest nations in the world. We should be able to enact an emergency such as this momentarily, right? We should be able to just get on it and go. But we have such failed leadership right now around this. And we're
Bigly.
we're not reacting in the proper way. What's your union doing to ensure that the proper stop gates are in place in the future to handle something like this?
Well, I mean, AFT, Randy Weingarten.
Come on, Amanda, third host.
We love it. No. We're getting some crossover right now. Amanda's the host of Labor Radio.
Hey.
So it's a very incestuous.
So wait, you're asking me the questions about why we should have a union, and she's asking the political questions.
It's all political.
She's always got my back. Thank you very much, Amanda. Yes.
So I would say AFT, our International Union, American Federation of Teachers, and our international president, Randy Weingarten, is really taking this issue on because there's a lot of issues. Like, we're not getting testing fast enough so that we can tell. Mm-hmm. They were gatekeeping on the testing. And I think OFNHP is going to take up that issue. We have some stewards that are working on that right now that are really smart, and they're really looking at that national picture. So I think our steward delegates assembly is going to hopefully take that on.
What's a steward?
A steward is a great thing that a union is. It's the backbone and the skeletal structure of a union. Mm. So when you have a union, you have people that are trained and have a responsibility. They decide to take that on to defend the contract and defend their colleagues. And they are, trained in whether labor law, contractual, how to defend their contract. And, some of OFNHP's stewards are amazing because they're also political activists, social activists. Mm-hmm. So, when I became president, I was, labor doesn't have a deep enough bench that we get to say, oh, you're only going to be involved in this way. Mm-hmm. So I thought we needed to broaden that. Like, we really needed to get our political group going. So we're kind of getting that going. We really needed to get, we changed our constitution so that we would have the steward delegates assembly. So we would be able to take the pulse of the front line, and they could say things like, we need to take a position on coronavirus. Mm-hmm. We need to take a position on this political issue. Mm-hmm. We need to take a position on the social issue. And really kind of set the frame of OFNHP. And so, like, all these groups are kind of struggling because we're new and we're trying to figure some of this stuff out. And as a union, we've never done that before. So it's very exciting. We have stewards and we have a steward delegates assembly. So they represent a region or an area in the organization. And that's what they do. They're going to take this on, I think.
So what are you hearing from your members about how they're engaging with this, like with the patients and people who are coming in that are nervous? Like, how are they handling it?
So there's two questions here, really. One question is, how are our members handling their own anxiety professionally, right? And then the second question is, how are we interacting with the patients who are having their anxiety? Mm-hmm. So, you know, to the first question, there's some anxiety because, you know, once again, we're rushing in. We would never dream of not, and we don't know what we're walking into. And the CDC was not providing us good guidance, and they weren't telling us entirely what PPE to use.
What's PPE?
Personal protective equipment. That's your gown, your gloves, your mask, your goggles, right? So they weren't giving us good guidance on what to wear. And so we were, you know, we were a little bit like, wait, we heard somewhere about an N95. So an N95 is a type of respirator mask that really filters air through down to a certain micron level and would keep the coronavirus from reaching you. The problem is you're going to walk around with this N95 on, which you can hardly breathe in. You can't.
Yeah.
And you don't catch coronavirus through casual contact, like through just talking to someone. That's not how you're going to catch it.
Please say that again.
You are not going to catch coronavirus through like casual contact. Now, don't lick the backs of the bus seats.
That's not casual contact.
Yeah, don't.
That's casual about licking a bus seat.
Yeah.
Depends on the route you'd ride.
Some people, you know, like you go to the grocery store and touching the handle on the carts. Don't lick your hands. You're going to be fine. You know, wash your hands. And really, that's the fundamental, like, wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Cover like your mouth into
wash
your...
Wash your hands. Wash your...
Cover your...
Wash your hands all the time anyway.
Sneeze into your elbow. Sneeze into your elbow, you know? I'm going to tell you, we have a woman at the office who I work with, Megan Heiss. Shout out Megan. If she was listening to this right now, she's rolling on the floor because she knows that I am the worst culprit. I always have my hands on my face. She is always like, you are a bad culprit. You're not the poster child of that comment. But
you always have your hands what?
I'm always touching my face.
Oh yeah.
I'm always playing with my hair. I'm always doing all the things that you shouldn't do. So
So
it's really important. And it's just, anyway, shout out to Megan, but because she gives me a hard time about that. But honestly, that's what you do. Wash your hands.
Yeah.
Think about, like, when you wash your hands, go watch the YouTube video. Really watch it. Like, wash your hands, wash the back of your hands, wash your thumbs. Take your paper towel and turn off your handle. Open the bathroom door with your paper towel. Like, do the things.
I'm a preschool teacher, and I've been talking about this all week. In the words of one of my four-year-olds, if you're walking by a sink, even if you don't have to go potty, you can just wash your hands to keep yourself healthy.
Right on.
Yeah.
That's adorable.
Out of the mouths of babes.
That's adorable.
You can do it. We can all do it.
So I know that people are buying up more toilet paper and hand sanitizer than usual, but what are they talking about as they're like buying the stuff?
A lot of them were just saying, you know, we saw this on the news this morning. They gave us this big list of things that we should get. We've got room at our house, so we thought, you know, no harm, no foul. You know, we're just going to stock up. And, you know, they're talking about quarantine. So this way, if we're stuck at our home, we're good to go. But a lot of the things that they were putting into their carts were not going to help them fight the coronavirus, right? Because they were buying masks that were not... Well, beer will definitely help you fight it. But...
definitely.
Spiritually.
Spiritually, yes. But, you know, they weren't buying the right kind of masks. They were buying, you know, these generic masks for, like, spray painting your, you know, bathroom or whatever it is you're doing.
Surgical
but,
yeah.
You know, and buying medications that weren't even going to be appropriate, right, for coronavirus.
Just take some ibuprofen.
Just, you know, it was, but it was,
Allegra.
But the energy in the store was what was crazy, too. It was like, something really is going to happen, you know. It was like the Y2K thing. Everybody kept referring back to that, actually, as employees, you know, talking to each other.
Well, now you have to say what Y2K is.
Oh, you know, when...
Some people...
We have a very young audience. Yeah. So Y2K was when we went from 1999, shout out Prince.
party, baby.
We thought the world was going to end and because computers wouldn't be able to recognize the year 2000. And so we thought the world was just going to collapse and we needed to stock up on all things that we used to do, like, you know, paper checks and things like that, or actual cash, yeah. All of these things that we wouldn't be able to do with the computer anymore. And so it became this big hoarding expedition, right? And that's really what last Saturday looked like in the store.
Wow. So I wanted to talk about and ask both of you, especially like from a health professional perspective, of what is the line? Because right now I feel like two of the like most like polar perspectives online is like, this is the apocalypse, this is happening, we need to stock up on all this stuff, we're going to die, this is ridiculous, this is like the worst thing ever. And then people who are like concerned about kind of the racist fear-mongering around coronavirus and are saying like, this isn't a big deal at all. All of this is just racist fear-mongering, and actually coronavirus is not a big deal. And I feel like those are kind of the two
ends. What are the racial implications? What are you talking about?
I've seen a lot of, I mean, initially there was a lot of rhetoric around how it started in China, and there were people who I saw on CNN, on social media, from a lot of different sources of people being like, will I get it from a package that I got from China. Will I get it by eating Chinese food in a Chinese restaurant? Like,
restricting passports.
A post that went viral of an Uber driver, of a person whose Uber driver was Chinese, and thanked them for not turning down their ride, because I guess this person had experienced people turning down his rides because he was Chinese.
The ignorance in this country is profound, and the media preys on it, and our current leadership in the White House seems to have magnified it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like to tease my colleagues at the AFT, like, hey, you're the teachers. You taught them.
I mean, it's not wrong.
But it does point to an issue. Like, we're underfunding education.
Mm-hmm.
We are not able to teach human beings the basics. And that's what we rely on our teachers to do. And we are underfunding education. So in addition to all the other things we're underfunding education.
Absolutely.
But I really...
It's a culture of austerity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing to the racial implications, you know, in this country right now, we're just deciding who to pick on. So, you know, the thing about food and whether you're going to get it from food.
Yeah.
It's kind of like picking on an entire part of the world and the way they choose to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and then saying, well, it's because of the way they eat that we have this, and it's all their fault. And you know what? That's just not true. It's simply not true. You know, we get viruses all the time. It's not really because of one part of the world. Several have come out of China, but that speaks to like their public health issues, not to a racial issue.
Well, also their total population.
Yeah. Well, and they can do a lot more things. Like, here's the problems that we're facing right now. Like, we cannot going to contain this virus. You can't. We've never contained a virus in the history of any virus, right? What we've had to do is get ahead of it.
Yeah.
Figure out the vaccinations, figure out how to take care of it. You are not going to contain it. And so in China, they they can demand people into social isolation.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do that here. So like, we're not going to do that. We're Americans and one up them. We're Oregonians. Like, no one's going to do that.
During the Ebola outbreak, they did force quarantine on the first few people that were diagnosed in the United States.
They can quarantine people here, but you can't say city of Portland.
Okay.
Like, in China, they could tell the whole city or the whole country.
I see.
Go home,
a little
and
bit
stay
different,
home.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not to mention, they built hospitals from the ground
in
up.
In like 8 days.
I was watching how they were able to just pull that off. Like, that can't happen here because there are just too many contracts.
Because of our freedom,
so many palms,
Alyssa,
that need
because
to be
we're
greased,
free.
So many people that need their millions of dollars before you can do any of that.
I mean, it speaks to what Amanda was talking about, where it's, all of these things that we tout about this country that people think that, like, doesn't exist, like, freedoms that people assume just don't exist at all in any other country.
Yeah.
And these countries that we stigmatize as being, like, inherently authoritarian, where everybody there is, like, brainwashed and bad, and yet, because of some social programs they have and some just, like, policies in place that we refuse to implement, they have the infrastructure to fight epidemics like this. Like, that's pretty important. Like,
here, you right. have the choice to go to Fred Meyer and buy up all the hand sanitizer. Freedom, baby!
And money yeah, is exactly. speech, and I choose to speak okay. and buy my hand sanitizer.
And they haven't even used one bottle yet, but they've got 10 in their refrigerator.
You know what, though? And for people who complain about capitalism, the people who bought that toilet paper, now that it's sold out, are going to sell it on eBay. So let's just be real, right?
Right, exactly. You're probably right. My thought is also, along with the racism issue that you referred to, Olivia, is the economic issue around being able to actually go and find out if you do have it.
Yeah.
You know, the healthcare
well,
in
there's
the
a
United
couple
States,
problems.
Right?
Like, are you not, you know, because, first of all, there was the gatekeeping around it. And so the other thing is, are we suppressing our numbers by not allowing enough people to get tested? So, you know, we could technically be suppressing the numbers of the real numbers of people who have coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what OFNHP wants to take on. One of our stewards, Paul Sear, said, you know, wrote this really great position paper, and that's what he said. And I'm like, you know, wow. So I think that's what we have to take on. And now they're going to make it public, but now, because not everyone could probably afford it, you know, it's a problem. No, Governor Brown has made it so if you're going to have a coronavirus test, you don't have to pay a copay, etc. Like, she's shored that
if
up.
If you have insurance.
Exactly.
Excuse me, you blew my punchline.
Sorry.
So, like, but, you know, again, it implies that you have insurance and
yes,
that you have access to health care, and not everyone does. So, you know, we have to think about how we're suppressing the numbers. And also, the other things are, like, sick leave. People can't afford a day off, and not everyone has sick leave. Not everyone mm-hmm. has a sick, you know, paid sick leave. So, and also people may not be able to afford the copay to go to the doctor. And then after you go, they want you to buy medicine, and you took a half a day off, and now you go home and your toddler's sick in addition to it. So, you know, it's a complicated issue. And really what it all roads lead to universal health care.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, now thank God you didn't steal that punchline too, Amanda. I was painting a line down the road and I was waiting for her to steal it. But you know, it really does lead to universal health care and what we need to make sure that everyone's safe and everyone has equal access to health care. And that's, I can't stress that enough.
Yeah.
That's a regular punchline on this show.
Yeah. I mean, they were singing on Democracy Now! This morning, or maybe it's yesterday, and I've been thinking it the whole last 2 weeks where people are saying, like, oh, like, this is a great case for universal health care. And really what it is that the case for universal health care is perpetually there. But now that regular people have this impending fear,
it gets
about
confirmed routinely,
their
right?
yeah, yeah. health status. And all of a sudden, this, like, health complication that you can't help that's going, that has the potential to cost you money that you don't have, happens to people every day. My mother is $1,600 out right now paying for my medications because I had two medications that the copay, not the price, were over $800 for 30 days worth of medication. That's with insurance because our secondary wouldn't pick it up for no reason. We have Providence. Shout out Providence.
Well,
not,
you know,
not a friend of the show.
No, so, well, shout out. I take that shout out back.
You know, that's the thing is, like, at the contract that we represent in the Kaiser Permanente group, like, they have $10 copays, and we have, you know, like, $50 a month, and we have really no deductible. And so when I think of, when we're the same people that we're wheeling out that have a $3,000 a year deductible and make half of what we make, we're wheeling out people who can't afford their meds because they have to meet their deductible of $2,000, $3,000. You know, that's the kind of stuff that has got to stop. And, you know, that's the other, you know, shout out for being unionized. When you're unionized and you can work together to gain better benefits. Now, that contract at Kaiser is 40 years old. It is very mature. Like, we have fought for years and years and years on the backs of our brothers building that contract up. We have a contract, you know, like at Peace Health, where we haven't really gotten to a place to negotiate benefits. We haven't built that power yet, but they're well on their way. So, you know, those are the kind of things that are really important. And I think those are the kind of things that we have to like be reiterating. So that's, you know,
and
unionization helps that.
And unionization, I am 1,000% behind unionization. The thing with the universal health care that you referred to earlier is that we can take that off the bargaining table with a union.
Yeah.
if we have universal health care, giving us more power at the bargaining table.
So much more power.
And it's ensuring that we are not one-upping each other all the time. Also, because, you know, it's like, this union has great health care. I was an employee of Kaiser Permanente and had the OFNHP Cadillac plan and was very thankful for it every day of my life. Mm-hmm. My current union, not so much, right? I am
not
going
yet.
To, not yet. I have to
get
qualify to get my health care over a 6-month period. I'm employed. I still don't have health care, though. So it's with universal health care, everybody wins. Everybody wins, not just the people that have a union. And it gives the unions more power to do what they need to do with their employer for those working conditions.
That is one perspective. I know that there are unions that don't want to give up their health care that they've fought for. And so, you know, I think, you know, the thing is, we're not going to swing the pendulum 100%. Like, that is going to cause, like, let's do incremental. Because what happens, I think, in this country is we swing the pendulum too far, and then everyone's mad and they fight to swing it back. And, like, how do we incrementally figure out how to get us there? And I think Oregon's done a great job at that. Like, they're getting that task force together, Governor Brown is, and they're going to look at that and evaluate and figure out how to put that in place in Oregon over time. I think that's the best approach myself. And it's the way to like build up a working plan that you can hold up to the rest of the nation and look at it. And I think a few states are taking it on in different ways. And that when they do, then we can start looking at what's the best way to do it in this country.
When you spoke to Senator Merkley, and this is Adrienne Inghouse, the president of OFNHP, what did he say about like his perspective and what he wants to do going forward?
Yeah, we didn't talk about that. I just said, help, we need a mask. And he said, I'm on it. So, no, he was thankful that people were raising it to his attention, that we needed supplies. He understood right away. The great thing about Senator Merkley in my mind is that I don't have to go into a big deal of a big depth of explanation. He gets it. You know, I can talk to him about staffing for unionized facilities, and I can talk to him about whatever I talk to him about in terms of healthcare, the guy gets it. You don't have to go into a big, long explanation. He is really well-versed. And so I always appreciate that because the way I'm going to speak to it as a union president and as a healthcare provider is going to be different. And I don't know how many government officials I'm trying to educate as I go. And you don't have to do that with him. He gets it. He knew what to do the minute he saw the problem. So I have to applaud him in that way. I'm a fan.
So also,
in case you can't tell, I'm a fan because he does that.
I know the TV and other media outlets that you've spoken to, like, have they cited what they think is the biggest misconception that they wanted you to alleviating people or to do public education around?
Well, no, people really want to find a demon. Really, I think the majority of the press has asked me to find a demon and point to a demon. And, you know, who are we going to villainize? And we can't do that. Like, let's quit wasting time doing that. I mean, I've lived that. I've seen it. It is inexcusable. It doesn't get you to a solution. The solution is going to be, let's figure out what the root problem is and fix it. I mean, we all know, like, yeah, there's a demon, there's capitalism. And, yeah, there's a demon, there. We don't have universal health care and blah, blah. But, okay, we don't have it. We're going to keep pointing to it and get there, but in this moment,
what
how
can
do we
better
fix it?
In this moment?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think like that's...
I'm so glad you called capitalism a demon. Go on.
Let's just say it.
I might get invited back.
That's the way you do it.
I mean, we can point to a lot of demons, and right now it's like, fine, villainize someone, but let's talk about the real problem, and let's fix the real problem. And the real problem isn't Kaiser Permanente. Well, it isn't really the healthcare systems. It's really that our government failed us. They weren't prepared, and they're not prepared. Now, we've had a couple warning shots. We better figure this out.
Well, yeah, the epidemic, or I don't think that's the right term, but the problem has been around since before Christmas, right? We've been dealing with this on a worldwide basis for a long time, and we knew it was coming. There was only a matter of time before it got to the United States, and yet we didn't do much.
Yeah, well, that's because, again, the president leadership, right?
Yeah.
And I'll just say, even for myself, I mean, just to talk about American and white privilege, you know, I sent them an information request like a week ago, right? I mean, talk about privilege. I other nations are shutting down their entire nation and functioning, and in this country, I think we really do walk around thinking that we're pretty protected, and I also did. And I was like, the minute I sent it, I'm thinking, oh, we'll get together next week and talk about this. And I always have to be reflecting on myself and how to be a better leader. And I'm just going, wow, I should have really caught that clear back here. Because when I found out and I called our international union, they had been working on this for weeks. They had sent us stuff. Yeah. And so, like, I should have caught the wave sooner. And as a nation, we should have caught the wave sooner. Yeah. So I think that's a call out that we have to observe.
Yeah, and it's really disappointing to find that the CDC is like almost our last go-to. We're going to organizations like AFT Healthcare to find out better information than we're getting from our government because of the lack of information being spread and the lack of response time.
When you, Olivia, were talking about what you heard on Democracy Now, Democracy Now 2 times a day on cable, listen every day. One of the things that they brought up that I really appreciated is that it's going to be people who are poor and destitute, that are houseless, that are going to get hit with this the worst. And like immediately I'm thinking about like all of the like doomsday nightmares that I've had about the fact that they're always going to be the people that get treated the worst and that are afraid of even coming forward to get help because they've been so thoroughly mistreated by the state. And that one of the things that they mentioned, and I just thought, oh, I'm so glad that they're bringing this to people, is that even if you have a lot of money, even if you're one of those people that has a high paying job, you live in a nice neighborhood and a nice clean house with a nice clean car with nice clean kids and everything about your life is nice and clean. You're regularly interfacing with food service workers, maintenance workers, people who don't make nearly as much money as you, who are going to be treated much worse, but here you are having to engage with them. And I just thought, like, it's very important for them to bring this up. So, like, even people who are doing very well, who otherwise would say to people who are in a lower socioeconomic position than them, drown, die. Yeah. I don't care.
Alyssa, to that very point, no one that's houseless has been diagnosed with coronavirus.
That means they don't come forward.
Exactly, because that would have meant that they had to go to the hospital and see seen, and someone would have had to take them seriously and test.
There's so many resources that go into being aware of your symptoms, understanding your symptoms, getting to the hospital, being able to like reach somebody, talk to somebody, like not be turned away, not have the police call, not have the police like called on you on the way, on like.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and you know, right now we have this higher than usual death rate associated with influenza because influenza, they missed the strain this year. And
every year, in my opinion.
Well, they missed the strain this year. And so when you think about it and you think, well, how many people maybe they thought died of the flu? Now, if they aren't testing to verify that's why what they had and why they died, then they could be dying of flu-like symptoms, and that could be corona, because corona's flu-like symptoms. So, I mean, how much are we missing because we're not testing, and we just now pulled the floodgate off of testing, and now it's physicians. And I actually think it is unfair to put that on the physicians in our country, because now they have to decide who gets tested and who doesn't, and how not to overwhelm the industry. That's a lot of pressure, because you know everyone's going to walk in there and say, I think I have a cold, because people just don't understand it. I don't blame them. This isn't a criticism. It's I understand what upper respiratory, lower respiratory, what all that means. I understand what a temperature, it doesn't mean I feel warm. It means I'm greater than 100.
Yeah.
So those are things that, you know, we don't teach very well. And so people, you know, and they're afraid, you know. But the truth is, if they get diagnosed with corona, they're probably going to be sent home and told to take like DayQuil, NyQuil, and blow your, you know, like that kind of stuff. They're not going to go to the hospital automatically. Yeah. There's a lot of people at home with corona that are doing okay and are recovering. And there's also, you know, we have these cases, and those cases are people who have a compromised immune system, mm-hmm. which being elderly is a compromised immune system.
Yes,
and
yeah.
those are the people that are catching it. So, and dying from it. They're the ones dying from it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the unfortunate part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and going back to what Alyssa had said, I mean, it all makes the case for mm-hmm. what I think a lot of us try to make the case for on all these other issues, which is that when the most vulnerable, the most destitute,
the
poorest,
oppressed.
The most oppressed of us are protected, that is going to lift everyone up mm-hmm. to receive the standards of life and of care that they deserve as people on this earth, and not just deserve, but that like actually make yeah. our society work. Like mm-hmm. hearing you talk right now, I just think it's ridiculous because it's like, it should just be intuitive and implicit and obvious that healthcare workers have access to, if nobody else, healthcare workers have access to the highest level of medical care, because those are the people who are interfacing.
Well, you know, I mean, here's another issue.
These things every
day. I read a quote from a colleague, and that colleague said, boy, you better get the nurses and the doctors to the table. Well, I'm sorry, in a hospital, we function as a team. That means the housekeepers need to be at the table talking mm-hmm. about how this workflow impacts them. That means nurses. That means respiratory therapists. That mm-hmm. means x-ray department, UFCW. That means all these different groups and how we function. And we have to look how you move someone through the facilities. And then you have to look at out in ambulatory care. Patients show up at the doctor. Like they show up at the dentist. How do we deal with dental? What happens when someone shows up at the dentist and they have these symptoms?
Yeah.
So, you know, how do they respond? And so having simulations is the best thing to do to really walk everyone through that process.
Is that happening?
No.
Okay.
That's my number one thing. Just do some simulations because it really breaks down barriers. And then people look at where there's going to be problems with their workflow because every clinic's different. Every office is different. If everyone knows room 9... is a room for the corona patient, that no one will use room 9. But if we aren't walking through simulations, it was 8 or 9, I can't remember. You know, mm-hmm. it's like it really helps. It's like code teams, that's why we practice having people with their heart stop, people that stop breathing. We practice. So when it happens, we instinctively know
yeah.
what to do. And this should be the same way. There should be simulations. You know, in addition, a lot of organizations have flu masks on. If you don't get a flu shot, they make you wear a flu mask.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a CDC recommendation.
Yeah.
And they're just doing it to be punitive. And it needs to stop because it's wasting our already precious resources. We mm-hmm. already know that we don't have enough supplies. We already know we don't have enough surgical masks. So why are we continuing with that practice that isn't even based in science? So, you know, I think those are some things that we have to think about as an industry. And then again, sick leave. You know, what are we doing about sick leave and people not coming to work because they're sick? They should not think they're going to lose their job.
Yeah.
Or we should figure out how to coach people or help people and figure out what the real barriers are. So I think those are some of the issues I think of. You know, simulations, making sure we have the right equipment, make sure we're trained to use it, make sure everyone understands the plan. Because, I mean, be honest, we're going to be less likely to have corona in a dental office, but that's why they need to practice more.
Because when it happens, they'll be less prepared.
Exactly, because yeah. they won't think of it instinctively. Mm-hmm. That's why they have to practice more,
yeah.
and we need to have more resources there. In an emergency department, we've been dealing with this for years. So when
yeah.
someone comes in, we're all like, oh,
yeah.
this is the thing, and we know. And they still need all the resources, and they still need the training, but it overlaps with a lot of other things that we do. So it becomes a little bit more instinctual for
yeah.
people in emergency departments. So that's why, you know, we can't forget outpatient. We can't forget clinics. We can't
mm-hmm.
forget dental offices. We can't forget daycares. I mean, even daycares in schools.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
this was
gosh.
Spread in a school. What are teachers doing?
What are teachers in
yeah.
schools
I mean, there's
doing?
Been the, I don't, yeah. I mean, children have, there's been not, there's been like not very many or no, it's been showing up. Been less scary for younger people, right? Because older people and people with compromised immune systems have gotten it. But so there's that kind of makes you less worried. But I mean, it's we haven't received like any like guidelines. I mean,
so let me say one thing.
Yeah,
everyone should ask their employer for the plan.
Yeah,
you have a right from OSHA and a responsibility by the employer to keep you safe. Everyone should ask for their plan. Everyone should review their plan.
What's OSHA?
Oregon. Health and safety. It's health safety. And safety. A. Mm-hmm. What is it?
Occupational
health and safety administration.
Administration. Yeah. Okay.
So it is a government agency, and it sets guidelines.
Always
so
helping with acronyms. On
thank
the
you. I see that. You're so good.
My listeners tell me they don't like the acronyms.
I don't blame them. Mm-hmm. I don't blame them. So I mean, honestly, these you have a right to that information. Every employee does. Now, I mean, in a non-unionized environment, it's scarier to ask, but in a unionized environment, you get that plan, you look at that plan, you review that plan, you talk to your colleagues about whether that plan's adequate. If it's not, you notify your union and get some help figuring out what would be an adequate plan and getting and fighting that fight.
At my job, we were given some very basic parameters.
To wash your hands?
To wash your hands, to clean, to, basic cleaning protocol, and then told details about what we would do if there was a case. But we didn't get the information until a week ago. And I had parents asking me if we were going to shut down, temporarily asking if they could hire me. If
they could hire you,
because if we shut down, then they wouldn't have care, and so then which I would take because I'd be making more money caring for one of my lovely, lovely children in my classroom on the side than I would in my actual job until we get our contract.
talk about that contract. Talk about the rally tomorrow, Olivia.
Segue. tomorrow, March 7th. Today's Friday. Tomorrow's Saturday. You know how we love remembering what days of the week are when on the show. So tomorrow at 1 p.m. my workplace, my union, Growing Seeds Workers Union, we went public on February 17th. We will be holding a community support rally in Peninsula Park. Again, that's at 1 p.m. And this rally is in anticipation of our election on March 11th. I found out live on Jamie and Amanda's show. Ooh. Shout out to Labor Radio. Live on that show that our election is going to be March 11th. And I remember when we found that out, we thought it might be this week instead. And we were like, oh, my goodness. That's so far away. We really wanted it. I mean, not really, but we really wanted it to be this other week. And now we have to wait until the 11th. And it's just Zoom by. So
what's on the line? Talk about the politics.
Yeah.
So it was the ownership's decision. We have one owner. Her name is Kiri. And it was her decision to have us vote as three different locations. So that means that one location wins, the others don't. Two locations win, one doesn't. There will be locations, if they don't win, that will be excluded from the bargaining process. I'd be interested to see what that results in, because then you're going to have unionized workers and ununionized workers and locations in the same schools with the same guidelines, with the same philosophies, with the same bosses, with the same ownership, that have
different rights,
levels of benefits and rights.
Do any of y'all float from one location to another?
Very few employees, like a handful of employees who do like specific jobs. Mostly it's like people who, we all have the capability to float. If you're on support staff, which is just like people who do breaks, people who do planning time, like people who are not everyday classroom teachers. Mm-hmm. So I guess, technically all of us can float. They can ask anybody who has the ability, like, hey, can you work at this other location today? But there are specific people who tend to do it more often.
My point being that you would have the potential of working side by side with a unionized member and not being a unionized member.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know that won't happen, and we're all going to win. All three locations will win our election on the 11th. And it's going to be very exciting. And we would love to see everybody at Peninsula Park tomorrow at 1 p.m. to show your support and to learn more and speak up, if you would like, about why it's so important to unionize and why we need to have more support and representation and discussion about the importance of not just education, but pre-secondary education, preschool.
You would be the first.
We would be the... one of the, or it's still like.
Are you going to be independent or who are you joining?
We are going to be affiliated with the Isle.
That PALS Bookstore's with.
PALS, the Oregon Historical Society, and Columbia River Veterinary Techs. Those are our union siblings. We love the ILWU. We've run this campaign ourselves. Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah, we have big, big love for them. They've been so supportive and they've let us, like this campaign is ours. Like it is completely worker led. We've had only guidance and support from them and they've allowed us to do so much in such a small amount of time that we've been with them. Yeah, so we're super excited.
Including your logo, which I'm looking at on your shirt, which is a solidarity for
designed by Charlie Breyer, one of my best friends, local tattoo artist. I'm wearing a Growing Seeds Workers Union shirt. There's a fist holding a red crayon. It says ILWU Local 5, suspiciously close to the PSU Student Union logo. and I love it.
Love it.
Which is where you're got your roots from.
That is where I got my roots. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of crossover, but yeah, we're all. It's been I've never been in a union before, and the best part has been working with people who I've organized with before, and working with my coworkers who I didn't know before, who weren't organizers, who are now like taking up all of this work. And we're really
it's
kind of strong right now,
spreading like coronavirus.
Oh my god! Oh no, no,
it's
no!
A bad
no,
joke.
No,
bad no. pun. Bad pun.
No, 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 no.
The spirit of solidarity is spreading.
Oh gosh.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Been wonderful. Yeah.
You cannot invite me back if you want.
You're going to come back. You've been here before, and you're going to continue to be here.
You must.
No matter the puns, we want you here.
In case people don't know, I want to give you your roses right now. Amanda also was one of the key leaders in the fight for 15 in Oregon, was on the leadership committee for 15 now, which was, to me, like one of the best campaigns that I've ever been involved with, thanks in large part to your leadership. So I just want people to know who's on the show. That's Amanda, the host of Labor Radio.
Alyssa as well was on that steering committee. I think that the community here in Portland, as far as the activists that are involved in bringing up workers, is incredible. I've had great leadership with Adrienne at OFNHP. She's always been there for us to help in the community, organize within our own hospitals, et cetera. And working with you and Olivia has been really exciting as well. It's so exciting to see new unions form out of nothing.
Absolutely.
It's like,
yeah, it's
so
crazy.
Awesome.
I'm going to say it makes you cry. I've been, we are the fastest growing healthcare union on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And so we've had the opportunity to have a lot of elections in the last couple of years. We have doubled our membership.
Yeah.
And so we've had the privilege of being at a lot of votes. I save all the vote counts because you tick the marks. You do a little hashtag every time they say a vote for you, and I save them and put them in my office because it is a responsibility and honor to watch them, and I can't stop crying when those votes happen because you're like, it's a step in the journey, but it's the one that's the first finger at the boss saying, we got this. Oof. And so it's so powerful. So powerful.
Well, and to be the first in your industry too.
One of
incredible.
The first, we haven't confirmed it fully. It's hard to find something that you don't. Preschool's weird. There's all different kinds of forms. But yeah, we will be one of the first private preschools with a contract in the country. Mark my words. And thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Adrienne and Amanda, for being here and shedding some light on
What about
this.
Me?
Oh, well, you're always here.
Thank you for inviting
me. Next Friday, we're not going to be here.
Issue. And thank you, Alyssa, for starting this show. We wouldn't be here without you.
Next Friday, I'm going to be at the Jobs with Justice convention, so you got to get a co-host in to take over for me.
Serious?
I'll be your co-host.
Oh, okay. So thank you very much.
No,
good
thank
luck,
you
everyone.
For having us. It's really a privilege to come and talk to you. And
thank
talk
you for being
this.
Here.
I'm so privileged to like hear about your new union. And
You're gonna have me crying. I will be crying like you were talking about.
Let's go cry over dim sum.
Yeah,
okay.
You will.
Okay, so stop discriminating against Chinese people. Okay, let's go to HK Cafe.
Alyssa's Chinese. 82nd.
We'll talk about that another day. I'm 1/8 Chinese. It's true. The cat's out of the bag. Okay, have a good week, everybody.
Thank you,
everybody.
Bye.
KBOO is hiring. We're currently accepting applications for our volunteer and outreach coordinator position. We're looking for someone with experience in volunteer management and outreach to diverse communities and preferably has experience with nonprofits. This is a full-time position. For the full job description and instructions on how to apply, see the job listing on our website at kboo.fm/employment. Applications are due Saturday, March 22nd by 5 p.m. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Project Censored Film Screening of United States of Distraction, Fighting the Fake News Invasion on Wednesday, March 25th from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. United States of Distraction is an analysis of how fabricated information poses a threat to democracy. The film will be followed by a Q&A with film contributors Nolan Higgin and Mickey Huff. Again, that's United States of Distraction, Fighting the Fake News Invasion, on Wednesday, March 25th, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Ave in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm at the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I wish somebody would come and ease my trouble in mind.
From the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. We will ease your troubled mind with licensed mental health counselor, Cheryl Jefferson. Political analysis provided by the Prophet of Rage, and calling in from the planet of rhythm and blues, musicologist Professor Soul. From the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. I'm your host, Lanita Duke.
They tell me when you tell somebody your troubles, trouble fly away from you.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KBOO Community Radio.